You're listening to Movie Sucktastic.
Sounds like some bad movie.
Yeah. You know, we tried watching the little lady and I, we tried watching Top Secret last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife, she says to me, I want to watch something, you know, that I've never seen before that's funny. And I'm like, we should watch Top Secret. And she says to me, I don't think I've ever seen that. I guess it's a very young Val Kilmer. I think that was his first movie, too, or his first major film. And about 15 minutes in, I talk because I was like, you know, this is from the same people that did Airplane. And she's like, you know what? Let's watch Airplane. I've never seen Airplane. I'm like, how have you never seen Airplane?
Kids.
She never has seen Airplane. So we watched that. And we watched this. In a different state of mind, we'll say. And she just could not believe what she was watching. I was like, this is the perfect movie for that. I'll tell you that. Just so many wacky things. Maybe we'll watch Airplane 2 this weekend. The sequel. We're back.
But we're not here to talk about Top Secret.
No, we're not. We're here to talk about Rennie Harlan's The Adventures of Ford Fairlane. Oh, fucking shit, my Christ. He can't say, oh, fucking shit, my Christ on the air. Now, Rennie Harlan directed two films that summer. He had a huge flop with this movie and a huge hit with Die Hard 2.
Now, hold on. Now, everybody considered it a flop. The film cost $20 million. It made $21 million, and they pulled it early because of bad reviews. I don't really think it flopped. They didn't give it a chance.
Well, that's probably true. They were expecting more from it, honestly. Mm-hmm. If they timed it better and released Die Hard 2 when it came out, and it was a big hit, and then released Ford Fairlane late. They did do it that way, right?
If they
hold on, I'm going to find out real quick. If they released it later, yeah, it came out July 11th, 1990, Ford Fairlane. And Die Hard 2 came out July 2nd, 1990. Like, what are you doing? He's got both movies a week apart? No. You release Die Hard 2 because you know it's a guaranteed slam dunk, right? Then you release Ford Fairlane in maybe the fall, like November, and go from the director of Die Hard 2. Guaranteed this movie makes 50, 75 million or more just based on that alone.
I got to admit, Rennie Harlan is more misses than hits for me.
Oh, 100%. We could go over his catalog super quick.
I mean, all you have to do is mention Cliffhanger and Cutthroat Island, and then that's it. We don't have to talk anymore.
As far as directing goes, yes. I mean, he was really... And you know what's funny? Earlier, because I've watched this today... when I went and looked at his IMDb profile, I was like, oh, that's why Robert Englund was in this.
Yeah.
because he directed Nightmare on Elm Street 4 2 years earlier. And I'm like, oh, now I get it. Because I'm like, it was kind of out of left field. I'm like, Robert Englund, Freddy? Like, he was kind of at the height of playing Freddy at that point.
And so
I'm like, what's he doing in this? And then it was like, oh, him and the director are buds. Got it. Okay, he called him and was like, can you be in my movie? I need a British guy, which I don't think he doesn't have a British accent normally. He just did that for the movie. And I don't know. It was like Robert Englund's muse, his inspiration was that fucking ferret thing from Roger Rabbit. You're gonna die laughing. Like, it was like that was his inspiration when he did this. But all right, so you got Nightmare on Elm Street 4. Okay. Then he goes right from that into Die Hard 2. They're like, you know what? You did so great with Nightmare on Elm Street. Let's give you an action film. It's like, because everything before that was not really. I mean, he did commercials mainly. And then he did Adventures of Ford Fairlane. They doubled down and gave him two movies.
Mm-hmm.
He did two. And then after that, he did Cliffhanger. And then after that, he did Cutthroat Island. Yeah. And then he clawed his way back with Long Kiss Goodnight. I still really love that film.
Love that film.
And then he talked Sam Jackson in the Deep Blue Sea. Because, like us, Sam Jackson really liked Long Kiss Goodnight. And then, after that, he's been doing nothing but hot garbage after Deep Blue Sea.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like,
yeah.
Driven is a 4.6. I mean, Mindhunters, we saw that. That's a 6.3. Mm-hmm. That's
a Riff Trax film. That's how bad that is.
I mean, that's a horrible movie. How is that a 6.3? Then he did Exorcist the Beginning. Was that the first one or the remake?
The
Exorcist films that came out in 04. Oh, Rennie Harlan directed one of them, and then Warner Brothers was like, you know what? We need to film this again.
Yeah, so there's two different versions of it. I don't know which one.
But Stellan Skarsgård is in both.
I know I have them both because I made sure my collection had all the Exorcists, even though I don't care for them.
I'm trying to remember which one was it. Like, did they bring Rennie Harlan in to go fix this, or Rennie Harlan was the first one where it was like, fuck, we need to get someone else to fix this.
Mm.
Because I believe both Exorcist films have the same year of when it came out. I'm pretty sure. 2004, right? Let me see. Okay.
Yeah.
It's just because, you know, we're in it. Uh-huh. So, Dominion prequel. And you know what's funny? Okay. So Rennie Harlan's came first.
Okay.
And it got a 5.1 on IMDb. And Warner Brothers is like, you know what? This is Rennie fucked it up. This is hot garbage. We need to film this again. Different director, different take. And it's still got a 5.1 the second time around too.
All I got to say is Rennie Harlan. I fucked him.
Oh! Yeah. So the second one was called Dominion. Prequel to The Exorcist. The first one was just called The Exorcist the Beginning.
Okay, yeah.
But Rennie's came first, and then they redid it, and then Dominion came second. And who did the second one? Paul Schrader. The fuck else has this guy done? He's won an Oscar. Oh, he is nominated for an Oscar. Oh, he wrote Taxi Driver.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. But it's like, they thought he could direct stuff. What did he do before that? I mean, I guess he did some okay stuff. You know, like he did the Patty Hearst movie. He did Cat People, American Gigolo. But that's like in the early 80s. It's like, what did they think 20 years later? Like, yeah, let's give this guy, this movie. He did do Autofocus in 2002, which I liked. Anyway,
Right.
Anyway, we're off topic.
So The Adventures of Ford Fairlane is originally based on some articles or short stories that were published in New York Rocker and LA Weekly. They were written by Rex Wiener between 1979 and 1980. Besides the name of the character and the fact that he's a rock and roll detective, there is no similarity between the original short stories and the film. The whole film was all written around the Andrew Dice Clay persona to create this Ford Fairlane character for him.
Okay.
Now, at the time, Andrew Dice Clay was a very popular comedian. For those who are a bit older, I would compare him to Dane Cook, both in quality and content.
Poor Dane Cook.
Fuck Dane Cook.
I mean, I don't like Dane Cook's comedy at all. I really don't. But I would say that
all I'm saying is that
better than Cook.
All I'm saying is, like Dane Cook, Andrew Dice Clay was selling out arenas. He was selling out concerts. He was a very hot commodity. Everyone thought he was hilarious. I saw this film in the theater when it came out. I was 17 at the time, and I was the target audience. And I think that's part of the problem of the Ford Fairlane film. I mean, we haven't gone into the plot or anything, but I do think one of the things that really hurt the film is that everybody was expecting it to be like, I don't know, a noir crime drama or something. I don't know why they expected a comedian to do something that wasn't like a comedy.
Well, what I think everyone wasn't expecting was, yes, Andrew Dice Clay is the lead character. But I didn't think that they were maybe a little, but not to the extent of his stage character being up in forefront in this film. Like, literally everything he does on stage, he did in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. Now,
yeah.
I don't think everyone really expected him to do, like, to go in 100%. Like, might as well have been called The Adventures of Andrew Dice Clay.
Right, but what would you expect? Well,
maybe a more subtle take. Like, he could do some of his stuff that he's known for. But, like,
Hickory Dickory Dock.
Well, that's basically what he fucking did. Like, for instance, subtle, when he's leaving
subtly,
Johnny's...
Subtly's not...
When he's leaving Johnny's radio studio, when Johnny says he's going to give him $4,000... And he gives him 20 until, you know, he does the job. And he runs out of there and going, money. It's like,
yep.
That's basically what he does on stage.
What were people expecting? What did you want from this is the guy, this is his shtick, this is the character he plays. But
what I'm getting at is, I don't think everyone expected him to do it as much. I think you expected it to be in there, sure.
You know what?
But not to the extent that it was.
I'm one of those people. As a kid, I, for some reason, I was offended that the film was so stupid. And I watched it, I rewatched it with Holly, and I was like, what the fuck was my problem? I mean, it's a stupid film.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, where did, you know, where Andrew Dice Clay came from, there's nowhere to go but up.
I just want to point out, we were just basically talking about what people expected. Mm-hmm. I didn't mind that it was so over the top, because as an adult and as someone that has watched his stand up all the way back in the 80s on mm-hmm. the bootleg tapes and all that stuff, I've always had a soft spot for him. I just always have.
I can't say I didn't like him back then. But I wouldn't say I was a fan. I was like somewhere in the middle. I was like, yeah, I find him amusing. I mean, I paid to see him in the theater, so I liked him to an extent.
Okay. I mean,
but
I don't know if I'd call myself a fan. I just,
that's what I'm saying.
I didn't mind him.
No, and, same here.
You know,
same
it's
here.
Part of my childhood in the 80s. It's like, I shouldn't be listening to this. I'm 10 years old.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think that was part of the problem with the film, too, is that this is a guy who's, I mean, the film is rated R, but it's not a hard R.
No,
it's an R.
This actually could have easily been a PG-13 with scaling back and stuff.
this was a we said fuck too much R. This wasn't where he could have pushed it like really further into the territory that he was taking as stand-up comedy, which was very misogynistic, very very vulgar. But they wanted a wide audience, so they tamed it down. They gave him a kid sidekick, you know.
Which and, that kid popped up in a bunch of movies in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And then he kind of disappeared because I think a lot of times these kid actors, they get a lot of roles because they're cute kid actors. And then they become kind of not ugly teenagers, but you're not that cute kid teenagers. Anymore. You're not that cute kid anymore.
You can say ugly teenagers. It's okay.
Okay.
We all saw the kid from Home Improvements. We know what you're talking about.
True. True.
<Ooh.
laughs> So I didn't even look him up to see if he did anything else down the line. I really didn't.
No. So I didn't care. But so all that's working against this film. So I kind of feel bad for Andrew Dice Clay after watching this and is like, oh, what was all the feedback about? What was all the fucking bitchiness about? And Roger Ebert's like, oh, you know, he has the confidence and he has the confidence to be a good actor if he wants to try. Says, dude, you know that's a persona he's playing, right? He's already fucking acting, dick.
Right.
I mean, this is a character he plays on stage, and he brought it to the big screen. It's like bitching about Ernest films. It's like it's Ernest being Ernest. That's the whole point of the fucking movie. So don't start bitching that because like the you know this doesn't make sense. No, of course it doesn't. It's an Ernest film. Shut up.
Wasn't that kid in that movie with Rucker Hauer where Rucker Hauer was blind? It was Blind Fury.
Blind Fury could have been.
I think the kid. Yeah, here he is. There's the kid. Because I can't find his name. But Brandon Call. I believe that's the same kid. God, he's turning 50 this year. Jesus Christ. Oh, yeah, so, there he is. Ugly teenager.
But I just think all that was working against Andrew Dice Clay. You know, like they took his... They took his act and tried to homogenize it just enough to tweak audiences, and you know audiences wanted more. They you know they didn't want the cute koala apparently, you know. And I'll admit, I was one of the people in the theater when the credits rolled and it came up, and I was like, why the hell did they have to not kill the koala?
Yeah, right.
And I look back now, I'm like, what is your fucking problem? Why would you want the koala dead? What do you have against the koala?
Yeah.
It was cute. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you want to go through the basic plot of the film? I don't want to go too heavy into it, but do you want to give us a basic walkthrough?
Sure. So first of all, real quick, this kid Brandon Call, he stopped acting in 1996, 97. It says here that he's divorced with one child. And then it says trivia. Shot in both arms following a traffic dispute on September 3rd, 1996. That's how little information they have on him, that him getting shot by the police is in the trivia section. Living in San Diego, California, and working at his parents' gas station, he is also raising his 7-year-old daughter. Jesus fucking Christ. This poor bastard.
Hey, not everybody escapes the industry.
I know.
You know?
Wow.
it's a hard knock life.
So Andrew Dice Clay plays Ford Fairlane, who is a rock and roll detective, works in California, in LA, and he works primarily with rock stars, solving crimes and figuring out different ways to not get paid, I guess. So he
getting paid with gifts.
Yeah, gold records and gifts. How am I going to pay my rent with that? Oh! So he basically gets approached by Johnny, who is basically Howard Stern. that's basically
who an old friend of his.
He's an old friend of his. They were in a band together, and he gets paid by him to go find a groupie which is the lead singer of this band, Black Plague, which is played by the lead singer, the actual lead singer of Motley Crue, right. Vince Neil. Like, it's actually that lead singer for real. And that was kind of the height of Motley Crue, too.
The whole film is steeped in like a late 80s, early 90s MTV music genre.
Yeah.
So you got like the hair bands and all this kind of pop culture, musical references in the film.
And what's interesting about the time period that this movie came out, it was really the end of hair metal, and grunge was literally like knocking at the door. So the fact that this movie went all in on the hair metal, you know, glam kind of look, really, it shows its age a lot with that stuff, especially with
That
Troy guy that was like the next big thing after the, you know, Black Plague lead singer Vince Neil dies, which is how they start the movie. He's even got like the glam rock, you know, the hair metal band hair. And it's like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, the film is very dated. Every aspect of the film dates itself.
I mean, literally, it's grunge
time capsule
is like right at the cusp of just splitting open music. So
yeah, this film is almost like a last gasp of the MTV 80s.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we always have that conversation about how movies at the beginning of a decade is still really part of the previous decade. So you got a movie. This movie came out in 1990. Okay, it's the 90s now. But at heart, this is still an 80s movie.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like an 80s movie. It acts like an 80s movie. It moves like an 80s movie. It's an 80s movie that was just released, you know, 6 months later. That's really all it is. So you really don't get into the next decade for at least a year or two. You just, at least back then. Now everything's a fucking blur. Decades don't mean shit now. Like when you had the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, it actually meant something. Once we hit the 2000s, don't fucking matter. It's all a blur. Now it's
like, what month is it?
2000 to 2010 is no different from 2010 to 2020. It ain't. It just is not. Technology maybe is a little better, but that's it. It just...
What? VR? Fuck that.
After the 90s, there's no discernible difference between decades anymore. So, but this film at heart is still an 80s movie. It really is.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely. You know? Yeah. Yeah. Right down. So, and there are multiple. I mean, Vince Neil's not the only, I'm pretty sure that's who that was, who you're talking about.
Yes.
I'm not big into music.
I said
so
that.
I could be wrong. Okay. I just want to make sure I was right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's others like Miles Davis is in this, who recently just pulled out of a concert because Trump backed it. I thought that was funny. No, Morris Day, I meant, not Miles
Morris
Davis.
Morris Day.
He was just in the news.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, Priscilla Presley, there's a lot of musician related people in here.
Tone Loc. I mean, you're making a movie about music.
Not Tone Loc.
Yeah. You're making a movie about Tone Loc is in there too.
Was it Tone Loc?
Yep. The Funky Cole Medina.
I was afraid I did a racism.
This is 4 years before Ace Ventura.
Yeah. And talk about dating it too. Ed O'Neill's in it.
Booty time,
across the USA.
booty time, yay.
Yay.
I want to hear more Booty Time by Ed O'Neill.
Me too.
I got to remember too, Ed O'Neill at this point is also still doing Married with Children.
Yeah.
So it's like literally Al Bundy walked onto the set.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mind.
Yeah, but again, this is a film that wasn't trying to take itself seriously, and then everybody got pissed off at it for some reason because it didn't try to take itself seriously.
Right.
And I was one of those people. I this is my cinematic confession. I was one of those people that walked out of the theaters like, well, that was stupid. It's like, it was supposed to be stupid, jackass.
It was supposed to be stupid, stupid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm ecstatic.
I'm ecstatic.
I mean, you've got a film where there are sex jokes about a female corpse. You know, that's the kind of humor we're going for.
But I hope you filled out an organ donor. Oh,
oh, you're giving me a hot artery. You know, so we got that kind of shit in here, but we're still going to put a kid in here to try to tone it, to get, you know, to get younger people involved in the film. It's like, what are you doing? I just really feel like they did a disservice I almost called him Ace Ventura. Speaking of like,
oh, it's like, cause I just mentioned it. Cause Tone Loc was in that.
Right. But like, I felt they did a disservice to him by trying to tone down the film a bit. They really should have gone all out. These days they would have like gone for fucking broke. I mean, I'm not in this film. Oh, also like considering how under the gun he was for being misogynistic, you know, and anti-PC and all that back then, how tame does this film feel compared to like modern day?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like you were saying earlier, this is a soft R, even with all of the beach bunny.
No nudity.
No nudity. The closest thing you got is an underboob shot of a girl changing a light bulb later. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, a girl bending over in Daisy Dukes. I mean, like, if you try real hard, I mean, you're not seeing anything. It's all shadowed out. But that's as close to nudity as you get. And that's in an Andrew Dice Clay movie. You would think this would be wall-to-wall tits and ass.
It's really... You could make this film today and get a PG-13 if you just took out the fucks. That's the only thing holding this film back from being a PG-13
absolutely,
you know, family film. They should have leaned in more with the adult humor. And I don't know. I just they got too caught up in the hot, in the rock and roll
right. But I will say this, for what they did deliver, there was comedy, there was action.
Oh, there was, you know? Yeah.
Drama? Uh-huh. No, it's not that kind of movie. It just, that really doesn't. Maybe when the koala is hanging from the ceiling fan, at that point, the look on his face, he's like, "Ah, fuck." I was kind of starting to like the koala. That's as dramatic as it gets.
Speaking of the noir aspect of the film, how fucking smoky is like every other scene in this film? Rennie, cool it on the fucking smoke machine.
It's his style, though.
Oh, it's horrible.
And his style. Well, you know what it is too. His style. He, not that he stole it from Lethal Weapon, but that's what this movie kind of feels like in its action scenes, because it's the slow motion, death scenes, falling out a window, glass breaking, shooting. That was definitely a style you saw in the 80s. You know, with movies like 52 Pickup and Lethal Weapon and, you know, shit like that. So, like, why wouldn't he steal what works? I mean, far as the film goes, cinematography-wise, zero problems with it. As far as, like, action stuff, I had no problems with it.
If you watch the cinematography, you know they're trying to make this film like a comic book almost, with the like almost like with panels, and I like they constantly show shots of Andrew Dice Clay like pointing like his remote.
Oh yeah.
Like the close up of his face and his hand out there. Like that shot is repeated throughout this film numerous times. He was really trying to frame, you know, him for the screen and give him shots that like,
well, I'm sure the storyboards, personality. I'm sure the storyboards depicted that.
Oh yeah,
just really recreated what was on the storyboard.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's not a badly directed film. I mean, like you said, cinematography wise, no complaints.
Yeah,
you know, the story's shit. Yeah. If you try to follow the plot of why they killed Vince Neil, I mean, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, Wayne Newton is the big bad in this. He's the heavy, and I love the poster where it shows, it says, you know, it's Andrew Dice Clay as Ford Fairlane, Priscilla Presley, Robert Englund. And then at the end, it says Wayne Newton. And then underneath it says, yes, Wayne Newton.
Newton. Can I say it? The line?
Go, please.
I even pissed in the punch bowl.
You know, I looked up the scene where he's chewing on the CDs. Oh, hold on. Yeah. Real quick with the plot. Ford Fairlane is paid to find this
Zuzu Petals,
who's a groupie and was in love or in lust with the Vince Neil character. And it's believed that she has something that's important and everybody wants it. And what it turns out to be are three discs, CDs, computer discs. And that is the main plot of this film, is him trying to find her and then finding out that there's all of these discs that have all this sensitive information on it. And Wayne Newton, he is behind, Julian is his name in the film, he is behind it all because he realized he's not getting paid as much as he should, and the artists are getting paid more. So what he wanted to do was basically kill off his most popular band, bring in a new guy, and then basically control everything from the ground up and kind of rip everyone off.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he was intending to do. So,
and at
so
the
anyway,
same time he's, and at the same time, he's bootlegging his own stuff, which didn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. So when Andrew Dice Clay confronts him later with the discs, he rips them out of his hands and he starts chewing on them to destroy them. And he starts bleeding from his mouth. But, and I couldn't find it anywhere. And the only thing I got was his mouth really wasn't bleeding, because it felt to me like he really did cut his mouth when he chewed on the discs. And I was trying to find somewhere that confirmed it, because, and the reason why I say this is because this is a movie. So if he chews on the discs and it shows blood from his mouth, it shows him wiping it away, right? But they show him wiping it away several more times, where I was like, wait a minute, maybe he really did cut his mouth and they went with it. You know what I mean? Because he's wiping it away because it's dripping down his mouth, and then it's clean. So the next shot could have been just a regular shot, but you see it actually come out of his mouth again. I'm like, fuck, I think he might have really cut himself.
You think Wayne Newton's going to put up with that bullshit?
I found online that it said he did not cut himself. And I don't know if I believe it, but I feel like he did. That's just
that's what they want you to think.
Well, I mean, he put all of those discs in his mouth and started chewing on them. So I don't know. I think he did. And I think it's a movie that's 36 fucking years old and no one fucking cares or even has that information. If I could talk to Wayne Newton, I would ask him. And he would probably tell me.
Real quick.
Yeah.
Real quick. Another actor that appeared in the film that we haven't mentioned is David Patrick Kelly, who I like to think of as
the Warriors. He's come out and play. Yay. I mean, at this point, he had already done Commando. He did the Warriors already. He was in a couple of other things. He was in Dreamscape with Dennis Quaid. Dreamscape, right?
Yeah.
He was in Dreamscape.
He played a snake man.
Yeah, he's always typecast as like a piece of shit or a loser or someone that's crazy. He just always is.
He's like, what's his name? The guy that does Chucky's voice. Brad Dourif. He's the poor man's Brad Dourif.
Yeah.
If you can't get Brad Dourif, get David Patrick Kelly. He'll fill in for you.
And that's basically what they did all the way through the 80s and into the 90s.
See, and they even thought enough to put a character in like him, who is a complete sleazebag, Sam the Sleazebag being his name.
Yeah.
Somebody like that, they started off with somebody who's like a predator on women to kind of make Dice look better as he's being a promiscuous, misogynistic asshole. But they, you know, you got it. They're like, oh, so, you know, but at least he's not attacking women. Come on. You know, and have that character have a full character arc. So we don't have to worry about having too much of one for Ford. I thought that was interesting take on the film. Right. I thought,
because, the sleazebag character, he turns himself around later on,
right?
Saves the day,
yeah,
or at least saves the, Jazz, the assistant, helps her out.
Yeah, Jazz, the love interest,
right,
assistant, so to speak.
Which is a very young...
Lauren Holly.
Lauren Holly.
What has she been in lately?
Some Hallmark Christmas movies. She's had a lot of work done. Like, an uncomfortable amount of work done. She was
I remember her from Turbulence.
Yeah. She was in
not a good reference, but
no, it's a good one. That was, they tried to make that a huge hit. I think that did okay.
Yeah.
She was just recently in a movie with Steve Guttenberg where it was it just came out, or it's coming out. It's like a straight to streaming kind of movie. What was it called? It was called something Broads. And yeah, here it is. And Steve Guttenberg is wearing, now he doesn't have hair issues, but his character in this movie is wearing a really horrible wig. It's called Broad Trip.
Mm.
It's a Roku original. Oh God, it's a Roku original film.
Yeah, that's a good sign.
It got a 4.6
out of 20.
Oof. Oh boy. Yeah, there's Lauren Holly. She's unrecognizable. I'm just going to go out and say that.
I want to say one quick thing. One thing that I that really amused me that this go round watching the film again, because I haven't watched it really since it came out in the 90s, was when they go. By the way, I'm a sucker for when the film goes into that like ting 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 soundtrack.
Oh yeah.
Try to get. I know it's manipulative at a base level, but I'm a sucker for it. The minute that hits, I'm like, okay, we're in, we're doing stuff.
We're doing moving. Something. Something's happening.
Uh-huh.
We're on
yeah,
the move.
Yeah. I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
I am a sucker for that every time.
Well, just it works. That's why.
Yeah. Just put that snappy little beat behind it. And you got me, I'm enthralled, apparently you would imagine the only reason they have them go all the way to the top of the Tower Records building
it so he can Tower do that. Records, Capitol Records?
Capitol Records. Capitol Records. Whatever. Yeah.
Don't whatever me. You sound like my son Sebastian. Yeah, whatever. Close enough. I'm like, no, that's it's wrong. Sorry.
No, my favorite is I've heard it both ways.
Oh, no.
I use that all the time. Dude, I got that from Wesley. But when he gets all the way to the top, he does the he does the Cagney, or he does, you know. Top of the world, ma. when he does the part, Zuzu Pedals behind him does it too.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I don't know why, but that amused the fuck out of me. I thought that was adorable, and I thought it matched the film, and that made the film for me. At that point, I was like, okay, I understand now where it all went wrong back in the day.
And that's one of those things too. Like, if I could talk to someone, it's like, did she improvise that? Was it in the script? Did they like it and kept it? You know what I mean? It's like, was it always there, or you know, did they do it? And they're like, oh, let's do one with you doing that, or maybe she just did it, and they're like, I love it. Let's keep it.
Such a little thing, but it was almost like something in the back of my brain said, hey, they're having fun. It's like, oh yeah, that's right. That's what this is about. So I was a lot more relaxed watching the film this time. I wasn't trying to dig it up. And, you know, seeing Robert Englund, you know, flashback from the 90s is always a good thing. Always love seeing him and stuff.
I know. It's like, you think he's dead 3 different times in this movie.
This is really a great time capsule. From that time period, especially like the comedy that was Gilbert Godfrey doing. By the way,
I love Gilbert Godfrey, and I love that he was in this. It was only for 5 minutes, which I hated, but
I love he's in this because have you ever seen him do his Dice impression?
Yeah, he's done it on Howard Stern.
Yeah, I love that. Just the fact that he does that impression is like, oh great, he's in this film. He should have done it in the film. I would love to see that.
What's interesting is when Dice Ford Fairlane, he goes to visit him and he's doing his radio shtick and all that, he turns around and he's pretty much unrecognizable. Because you're always used to Gilbert Godfrey having like the squinty, yeah, your mother, like face and kind of the way he delivers his comedy and talks. So when he turns around and he's just being like real at that moment, I was like, who the fuck is that? And then he smiles and does the squinty thing. I'm like, oh yeah, okay, there he is.
Yeah, yeah. You're so used to seeing him in character.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much. I thought that was interesting. It's like, oh wow, That's Gilbert Gottfried has a different face. Affleck. Affleck.
Oh, I feel so bad that he got kicked off of those commercials.
Well, you know what? I mean, what did he do? He said something. I forget what he said, but it wasn't that bad.
I think it was something about Jews or something.
I think he is Jewish, so, you know, I mean.
That's why I'm saying. I think he said something about Hitler. I think it was Jewish related. So he said something about Hitler or Jews or something. And they were like, well, we can't handle this.
And let me tell you something. They got someone else just to do the Aflac duck thing. And you know what? I can fucking tell. It's like you're just trying to do your best Gilbert Gottfried and you're not succeeding. Sorry. Horrible. But, you know, they know that they can't use his voice, even though they probably have enough of it, because then they'd have to pay him, and they certainly don't want to do that.
I mean, long story short, I enjoyed this film more watching it now than I did back then. Just you know, Jesus, we need goofy films like this. Well, we really do.
You know, and I remember. I didn't love the film when I saw it the first time. I didn't hate it though. I thought it was one of those movies where I was like, okay, it's I kind of watching it a second time. I definitely enjoyed it more now. I can appreciate more of it now. So
yeah,
even with the goofy, you know, him doing pretty much a lot of his stand up in the film, or that character, I was still fine with it.
That's my like old age rational part rising up and like combating that part of the brain that's just always demanding shit. It's like, dude, he's a fucking comedian. That's what all he was supposed to do was his fucking shtick. What else do you fucking want? You know, give him some slack. Holy shit.
I think the timing of when it came out is still wrong. Came out literally a week and a half after Die Hard 2. That was dumb. Mm-hmm. This is a film that absolutely would have done better if it was released in the fall.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
from the director of Die Hard 2. That's all you needed to do. Not 9 days later.
Yeah, because we hadn't come together as a country against Die Hard 2 yet at that point in time.
That was 1990. That was the summer of sequels. Do you remember that summer? That was
It's every year now.
Well, that was just like a very memorable year because that was also the year that E! Entertainment Television first broadcast. And I remember before the channel went live, it went live on June 1st. I don't know why I remember this. It went live June 1st, 1990. They were showing nothing but movie trailers 24/7. Leading up to when they went live on June 1st. And this movie trailer was in there. Then it was summer of sequels. So you had movies like, you had Gremlins 2, you had Die Hard 2, you had RoboCop 2. I can't even remember all the sequels that came out that year. Predator 2. I mean, like, it was just sequel upon sequel upon sequel that whole year and that summer. It was pretty crazy. And most of the sequels did not hit. Like, they made money, but they didn't hit as far as being better than their original film. So I did like RoboCop 2, though. I have a real soft spot for RoboCop 2.
It's a classic.
I could feel my teeth floating. Tone it down a bit. Oh fucking shit, my Christ. He can't say oh fucking shit, my Christ on the air. To this day, it's like that's the one thing that stood out more than anything is that line. Mm-hmm. I loved it. Oh, it hurts. It hurts. Oh fucking shit, my Christ. I'm being electrocuted here. Oh man. Now, are we ready to rate this?
Is there anything else to add? I don't have too much to add besides just putting out random Andrew Dice Clay quotes.
Oh,
most of which are, oh, hey, Three blind mice.
Hickory dickory dock. Jack and Jill went up the hill. Oh!
Yeah. Honestly, I think this film was a step up to what he was doing in his stand-up at the time.
Yeah.
You know, there's actually some structure to it. I would...
Clint Eastwood, I fucked him. I
fucked him. Oh!
Rotten Tomatoes, this is a 23% critic score. That just goes to show that the critics really hated this when it came out. It might have had like some reviews added to it since then that have been that they approved of. They approved of the film that were favorable. The audience score on Rotten Tomatoes is 63%, though.
Mm-hmm.
So this is definitely, you know, the audience definitely did enjoy this film. Now, I actually don't know what it is on IMDb.
Yeah, I don't have my IMDb up.
I'm bringing it up right now. You know what? It's currently a 6.4.
A little low.
You want to go higher than a 6? You want to put this in the 7 territory?
No. I think 6 is fine.
You said a little really low. That would denote that you want to go higher.
No, I was wrong.
Okay. I'm totally fine with a 6. I think this is 7
As
much as I enjoyed this film now, you know, with all its kookiness and Dice doing his shtick and all that, I just can't consciously give this a 7.
No. I was off there for a second. On Letterboxd, I already have it at 3 stars out of 5, which is a 6 out of 10.
Then that's perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. 6. I'm good with a 6. 6
is... Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it... Again, it's so tame in comparison to what's coming out now. Watching it is almost a delight. It's like, oh, look how quaint we were when this is the shit that pissed us off. This is what the parents groups were all in a tizzy about. Look, oh, how adorable. You know, weren't we fun?
So much fun.
Yeah.
That's yeah, of course.
But yeah, but if you're a younger bloke and you've never seen this film, I recommend, and you want to really know what the 80s were all about, watch this.
For sure.
And that'll tell you exactly what the 80s was all about.
So, you know what time it is.
Are we going to spin the wheel?
I don't know if that was real excitement, fake excitement, sarcastic excitement. What the fuck was that? How many tokes have you had?
I'm going to spin my wheel.
Oh! Yes, it's time to spin the wheel.
Nice.
All right, so the way this works, to explain to everybody, we will spin the wheel, and both Scott and I have one veto each. So the new rules are, if Scott doesn't like something or I don't like something, we can veto it. We'll spin again. Once one person's veto is used, if we spin again, the next person can veto it. So then we'll spin a third time, and then if we don't like that, we can actually pick the best of the three. So that's the rule. All right. So maybe we'll hit pay dirt on the first spin. Or, I don't know, maybe we'll change the rule to 3 spins. I don't know. I like spinning this thing. I think it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
So here, let's see what we get on the first spin.
I'm ready.
It's just always like dubstep, like weird dance, like electronica. You come back to listen to any of these?
Oh, yeah, I do.
1960s film wheel. Wait, Scott. What are you doing to me, though? Now I gotta go get that and load that up. This is not good for the runtime of our show. Now I gotta go find another fucking wheel and add it to this and then spin again. And then there's 3 more spins there potentially.
The odds of that coming up were 1 in 300. Let's be fair.
It is. I don't want to get another wheel. I don't want to review a film from the 60s if I don't have to.
Fine.
I don't want to use a veto for this either, by the way.
then get the wheel. It's on the same. It's underneath the other one. If you go to the Google Doc.
No, I want to spin again and start over.
Not fair. Not fair.
I don't think a veto should be wasted for that wheel. I had no idea it existed.
Tell you what, if we both veto the two films, then the third spin has to be on the 60s
wheel. Okay, I agree with that. All right.
All right.
Let's do this again.
Okay.
Now it's just like fucking 60s hillbilly music. What the fuck? All right, what do we got? Big money. No wins. Sidekicks with Chuck Norris.
With Chuck Norris.
We just did a Chuck Norris movie.
I know. Yeah.
That's what the kid, he ended up committing suicide.
What?
What? Do you want to do another Chuck Norris movie?
I don't. I'm going to use a veto.
You're
on that.
You're
going to
use a veto? All right, good.
I'll use a veto on that.
All right, I don't have to waste a veto. All right, spin number two. What is this? Another dubstep. Fuck. No.
What?
Twilight franchise.
I'm going to get you to watch them, motherfucker.
But it ain't going to be today. That's why I'm glad you used the veto first. Because if I use the veto, I'm fucked. All right. Third spin.
No.
Now it's the 60s wheel. All right. Now I got to use the fucking 60s wheel.
And that's a small wheel. There's only like, I think around 30 films on that one.
Yeah.
I just did that wheel because we've only reviewed two or three films from the 60s. So I'm just trying to we don't have enough for a channel on YouTube yet.
There's 31 movies on the 60s wheel.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a possibility of something decent there.
Oh my God. I'm looking at some of these. All right. So is this a we do whatever comes up, no more vetoes?
It's or, best of three.
So whatever three. Comes up, we can still choose one of the three.
Yes.
All right. Here we go. Not 60s music, I'll tell you that. I've never heard of this movie. Psych Out. What is Psych Out?
Psych Out is a psychedelic film. Let me look it up real quick for you. God damn it. If I could spell properly today, then we'd have no
It's
problem.
Hyphenated, by the way. I don't know if that's...
Yes.
Yeah?
Yep. 1968, a deaf runaway is taken in by a psychedelic band while searching for her missing brother in San Francisco's Haight-Ashbury hippie district. Jack Nicholson is in this film.
Fuck me.
This is a hippy dippy trippy film that we will be watching.
Okay. I can maybe make this work with my Saturday night routine.
It's either this or Twilight.
I'll watch this all day long. All right. Psych Out it is. We'll be watching Psych Out.
Yes. Yes. Dean Stockwell's in it as well. Bruce Dern.
These are all very young versions of like young Jack Nicholson. This is like when he was in the movie Head, when he was in the Little Shop of Horrors. Yeah, the monkey film Head.
Well, that was the 50s, the Little Shop of Horrors,
No, I thought that was early 60s.
Isn't that 50s?
I thought that was like 61, 62, 63. Somewhere
there.
I know.
You're the number person.
Well, now I'm going to look it up. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's 58, but I thought it was closer to 60. It's 1960.
Okay. My bad.
So,
the black
Joey is right again.
Yo, we're used to that. Yeah, this would be it's a drama thriller musical. So that should be interesting.
So, yeah, Nicholson is just 4 years removed from winning an Oscar for One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Wow.
This is 1 year after he appeared in Hell's Angels on Wheels.
He was also an Easy Rider. Was that the following year, 69?
I don't know. I don't have Easy Rider up.
I want to say Easy Rider, 69. And Jack Nicholson was in that too.
Yep. They got around back then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. Psych Out.
Psychedelic Man.
I'm going to have to add that. Probably do that right after we're done with the show, that because I'll forget otherwise. And Mayor's going to ask me, ooh, what is this? I'll be like, you'll see. She'll just probably want to watch that just because it is 60s hippy-dippy acid trips kind of stuff. So,
just tell her it's Scott's fault and then she'll understand.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Don't worry. All right, cool. All right, let's go ahead and end the show.
All right.
Let's do that.
Oh.
Oh. Let's go ahead and end the show. There we go. All right, everybody. Thank you, as always, for joining us for yet another episode of Movie Sucktastic, episode 478 of Movie Sucktastic. Please go to our website. It's newly designed. I think you'll enjoy it. You can listen to the show there. You can watch the show there. Or I'm not watching. So you can listen to the show there, download the show there. You can click on the YouTube link and then go watch the episode we just recorded where we just reviewed the film The Adventures of Fort Fairlane.
Oh!
Oh! You can go ahead and do that at our website. You can go to iTunes. You can listen to the show there as well. You can go to Facebook.com/MovieSucktastic and you can see everything that we post there. You can go to our Letterbox site that Scott runs. There's no mistake about that. I have nothing to do with it. It's all Scott. It's all Scott, baby. It's letterbox.com/MovieSucktastic. You can see everything that he's doing there for us. You can leave us voicemail at 908-514-4470. You can also leave us email at themovieguys@moviesucktastic.com. Or you can download our podcast player at moviesucktastic.com/mst.apk. Better yet, just go to your Play Store or your Apple Store and just download your favorite podcast player and just do a search for Movie Sucktastic. Every single episode comes up for free. You can listen to them all the way back to episode one when it sounded like we were underwater. Although it actually, the audio was pretty good back then. I remember Scott saying, I wanted to try and make it better and now I can't undo it.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? Like, we have all this AI shit that's costing, like, billions of dollars and just, like, jacking up the economy to the point of where, you know, a graphics card that was $200 is now $600. Don't get me started. But maybe we can use AI to fix episode one. I don't know. Maybe it'll be worth it for something. But I doubt it. Do you have any words of wisdom, Mr. Wilson?
Andrew Dice Clay? I clocked him.
Oh! All right, everybody. We will talk to you next week when we review the 1968 film Psych Out.
Psych Out.
Psych Out. It's going to be good. All right, everyone. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Freak out, man.
You are freaking out, man.